This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every week, and you can find that at thehollywoodoutsider.com, iTunes, Stitcher, or your podcast app of choice. My name is Aaron Peterson. I'll be your host for this special episode of The Hollywood Outsider. As our loyal listeners know, every once in a while, we like to bring you interviews with independent filmmakers, give you an insight into both what goes into getting their films made, as well as insight into the respective film itself. The Funhouse Massacre is now available in limited release. We're talking to director Andy Palmer. To give you a little background on what the movie is, it stars Robert Englund, Jerry Burns, Scotty Thompson, Clint Howard, and the basic plot is six of the world's scariest psychopaths escape from a local asylum and proceed to unleash terror in a local funhouse. They set up shop, basically, on Halloween night, where people are going, they think they're going through a haunted house, so to speak, or a terror house of some sort, except everything is real. So all the things you think are fake, they're real. Yeah, so prepare to be really disturbed and amazed. I sat down with Andy Palmer to talk about the movie, talk about how this movie came to be, as well as the insight into some of the scenes, some of the plot ideas, you know, some of the direction, physical effects versus special effects and horror. It was great that he took the time out of his schedule to sit down and talk to us about it. I have seen the movie, and I do want to tell you guys, it is really fun. I was extremely surprised. You know, we do get screeners for movies all the time, usually independent fare, because we prefer independent fare if we're going to interview anyone. And you just never know what you're going to get, I'll be honest with you. And especially when it comes to horror, movies that are cranked out in that genre, it's hard to find out what are the good ones, what are the bad ones, you know, what are just stunt casting, that sort of. This one is really fun. It's a comedy slash horror movie. There's a lot of really clever jokes, a lot of good repartee, some good quips, some great gore, some great effects. There's a few plot twists. It's a really fun movie. I really enjoyed it. Highly recommend you check it out. In fact, if you want to check it out and then come back and listen to the interview, even though nothing's really spoiled, well, wait. Just kidding. We're not going to wait for you. Come on. I think it's time we get to our interview. Andy Palmer, really nice guy, like I said. He seems really proud of the film, and he did a really good job, so he should be. Now, keep in mind, this is a phone interview, so sound quality is not always optimal, but it is a really good interview. Andy's a really nice guy. Hope you enjoy my interview with the Funhouse Massacre director, Andy Palmer. Here you go.
Hey, Aaron. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Can you hear me okay, sir?
Yeah, I can hear you fine. Are you in the car?
I am in the car, headed back to good old Bakersfield, California.
Excellent.
My home, well, just frankly my home. No.
So you're multitasking. You're trying to drive and interview.
Yeah, that's
I like
right.
That.
That's right. Absolutely.
Well, first thing I always like to ask, I want to know what made you decide, I mean, I see you're an editor first, but what made you want to be a director?
Oh, well, I wanted to be an actor when I was a kid.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I tried out for, I grew up in Colorado, but I grew up near Aspen, and there was a casting director that would come out in the summer times and do workshops and stuff. Her name was Heather Axelrod, and so I would do all her workshops, and then she would have me audition for movies. So, like, if it was a 90s movie that had a fat kid in it, I auditioned for it. Every one of those movies. Heavyweights, Little Giants, Milk Money, you name it. So I always wanted to be an actor, and then I got to college, and I declared as a theater major, and I actually met an actor and was like, oh, yeah, I'm not good at this, so we should find another sort of way to be in the entertainment industry. And so that was kind of that. I started looking at other stuff and really fell in love with production.
Why did you think you weren't a director or an actor? Just because you didn't feel like you fit
well,
the part?
Well, I mean, I was okay, but I was like, you know, I was like the best actor in my town of 11 people, and then I met like people. Holy cow, you guys are yeah, got it, copy that. Yeah, I started to feel much more comfortable behind the camera for sure.
So was this your big break? I mean, in terms of directing?
I think so. Yeah, it's my fourth film, but definitely the biggest release, and I think the one that's kind of closest to me. Like I always wanted to do comedy, and I kind of delved into the genre stuff and fell in love with genre and horror movies, but later, and so all my other movies have been a little bit more serious in tone, but I've always wanted to get back to more comedy. And so then when I got Ben's script, I was like, oh my, you know, like this is perfect. This combines both worlds, and it was genuinely funny. Like I laughed out loud just reading the script, and I just was like, we can do something with this. This is a really special script. So yeah, definitely a big break for me.
Well, I was looking at this, and Renee Dorian, who plays Laurie, and Ben Bagley, is that right? Did I say it right?
Yeah, Bagley. That's correct.
He plays Deputy Doyle, and they hatch this story about six psychopaths who escape and terrorize a Halloween funhouse. It's a really disturbing concept, and I was shocked that I haven't seen it done before. And if it has been done, I'm not aware of it, but where did that come from?
It was the same with me. Yeah, well, so they were at Halloween Horror Nights at Universal Studios, and I think they were walking through one of the mazes, and there was a guy just like, you know, one of the like the set pieces, and the guy's getting his guts ripped out, which we actually replicate the scene that kind of bore the movie with Clint Howard as a taxidermist. And Ben, they were just kind of walking around, and Ben and Renee, they just started talking, and they were like, what if this was real? Because nobody would know. You know, like, everybody would just think it's part of the show. And then that was kind of where the story was hatched, and then they came up with the story and the characters, and they wanted to do something a little bit more fun, so they, you know, they took a lot of, like, kind of comic booky elements of it and stuff like that, and then it just made it a little bit more over the top and funny. And then I think Ben locked himself in a room and wrote the script.
And they were both really good. So were they actors by trade?
Yeah. Yes. So that's okay. So they're both actors, and this was really just kind of a way to kind of showcase their acting. And we had done that before with them a couple years ago. We did a web series that Renee had created called Clueless. Renee owns a murder mystery company. That's kind of how she pays the bills. Is she does these murder mystery shows all over L.A. And so we did kind of like an office-esque sort of web series that centered around murder mystery entertainers and like all the crazy customers and stuff. And so that's how I met Ben. Renee had been in a movie that we had done a couple years ago. And then Warner and I came on board, produced the web series. I got to direct a couple episodes, and that was that. We were pretty tight after that.
Well, in terms of the actual movie, there's some solid story twists, which I don't want to spoil for anybody that hasn't seen it yet, which I highly recommend people see it. I was pleasantly surprised. You never know what you're going to get with smaller budget horror movies, but man, it was really clever.
Yes.
Really clever.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
It was. I didn't realize how funny it was going to be. That's really, I think, the biggest surprise was how hysterical parts were.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, we loved it. I read the script and we did a lot of improvising, but there is a lot of the script that is in the movie, a lot of situations and stuff. As we kind of went through this and we started auditioning people and stuff like that, I said, you know, we really need to focus on the funny with this because this is genuinely funny. And we're going to make it kind of over the top, and I think there's going to be a lot of fun cartoony gore. We opted for funny over scary in a lot of aspects, but I think for that film, it definitely works.
And really small world, I was driving today, and I had Sirius on just randomly, and Clint Howard is on some talk show talking about this, just so you know. So he's,
oh, nice. That's great.
He's pimping your movie hard.
we like that. We love Clint. Clint was so great because, the moment that his agent reached out to us, I was like, we must get him. There was a couple guys like that. I mean, we wanted Robert from the get-go. We thought the warden part was such a perfect part for Robert Englund, and frankly, something that we could afford on our budget to have him for a couple days and stuff like that. But then when the guys, like we got Clint and then, like, Courtney Gaines came in. Courtney actually went and came in and read for the warden as kind of like a backup in case Robert said no. And, but the moment he walked in, I was like, this dude's in our movie. Like, I love Courtney Gaines. I love Can't Buy Me Love. The Burbs and everything
Burbs.
Like that. I was like, he's in the movie. We're going to put him in somewhere. And it just so happened that he was so good at doing Dennis, the park owner, that it was great. And Clint was the same way. Like the moment that his agent reached out to us, we were like, yes, we will, anything we can do, let's get him in the movie.
It's funny you mentioned Courtney Gaines because I literally watched The Burbs probably a couple weeks ago, and as soon as he came on, I'm like, that's how he talks? I had no idea.
Yeah, for sure. And so we had a little subtle nod to the Burbs in the dialogue for Funhouse.
Yeah.
Jerry had this great line when he goes, frankly, Pinocchio, we no longer have any use for you.
Yeah, it was very good. Yes, I got it.
Yeah.
Jerry Burns is probably, you know, Jerry Burns was in Justified. He's been in Dear John long ago. He's been in a ton of everybody. If you see him, you know who he is.
Yeah.
And he's been a favorite actor of mine for a long time. I was so happy to see him in just as a straight out bad guy. He's always like the subtle bad guy.
Yeah.
He's never flat out bad.
Yeah. How he never played the Joker, I'll never know, because he looks like, I mean, he's got that face. Like if you put, there would be no prosthetic needed. You put the white makeup on, and Jerry could be the Joker. I mean, he's got that kind of maniacal look to him, and then he's so darn good. It was funny when he came in. He said, you know, I can take this any number of ways. How do you want to do this? And then he just literally started delivering lines and they were, everyone was just a variation of awesome, you know? And I was like, let's go with this one, you know? But I mean, such an accomplished guy and such a pro. Yeah. Everybody was just so, so fun to work with. And I, you know, I learned a lot, working with these guys and kind of the roles that directors play with actors, you know, actors that have more experience, actors that have less experience and stuff like that. It was great.
Especially since I saw him a long time ago in a show called Vengeance Unlimited, I think, and hardly anybody ever saw that show, but he was such a good bad guy, yeah. So as soon as I saw he was cast, I was pretty excited. How did you get all these guys? Robert Englund, Jerry Burns, Clint Howard, how did you end up getting
sure.
them?
Sure. So we actually reached out on a recommendation to a casting director named Emily Schweber, and Emily is amazing, the sweetest woman in the world, and she does a lot of like more like Sundance-y movies, more kind of like art house stuff. Sent her the script, and I was like, hey, I know this isn't kind of usually the movie you do, but you came highly recommended from a friend of ours. Would you read it? And she did, and she called us back the next day, and she's like, yeah, this is totally not my thing, but I see where you guys are going, and I you know, it's just really juicy parts for so many actors. And so much of it was you know, with Emily. Like I said, Robert was kind of our guy for the warden. We thought he'd be perfect for it. Everybody else that came in was through Emily and everybody just fit so well. When E.E. Bell came in and read The Taxidermist, I didn't even want to read anybody else. Like, he came in and he did two lines and I was like, not The Taxidermist, Animal the Cannibal. And I was like, this is the guy. He's done. And it was the same with Chasti Balestros, who played Christina. You know, Christina's written as kind of the classic buxom blonde. Mm-hmm. And she came out and I was like, she is awesome. Like, let's throw a Hillary Clinton wig on her and we're good to go here. Cause she was terrific.
The bathroom fight is hysterical. The bathroom fight is hysterical.
Yeah. It was so much that night was like, it was kind of terrifying for me on two fronts. One, that I'd never done a sex scene, cause we shot the sex scene and the fight in the same night. And I'd never done a sex scene with nudity before, and I was extremely nervous. And then I had never done like a really choreographed fight scene, and that was kind of the first fight scene. And Rick Fike was our stunt coordinator, and the guy's great; he's just a pro. So we shot the sex scene, and again, Chasti and Sterling were just—they were so funny, they were so game for anything. And like I sat them down before the night, and I said, "Here's step one, and this is shot two, and this is shot three." And Chasti goes, "Yeah, that just seems like." I don't know. I mean, it's okay. But she's like, but what if I like jump over here and the reverse spider monkey this? And I'm like, I don't know what that is, but sure. Let's do the reverse spider monkey. That sounds amazing. and so they did. And she just made it so super easy for me. And then same thing with the fight. Rick choreographed it. And then we blocked it out. And it was just super fun to shoot. And really, there's one shot in the whole sequence that were stunt people, a very wide shot. Everything else was Chasti and Candace. They just went full into it.
And I love that you mix the humor with the gore, and it's not like humor in that why aren't you running away kind of thing. I mean, it's very much, it really is part of the moment. But the gore, you went with a lot of practical effects, which unfortunately a lot of movies don't do as much anymore. And I think you worked with Robert Kurtzman,
yeah,
right?
We did. Yeah, we worked with Robert and the Creature Corps, and our two head makeup, the people that were there just day in and day out, just elbow deep in blood were Becky Ingram and House, and they were great. And yeah, we right when I read it, I was like, I don't want to do anything digital. We should just do this all practically, all, you know, all old school. And then, you know, of course it came down to like, holy cow, can we afford to do all this stuff? Mm-hmm. And Kurtzman's group was awesome. We sent them the script and they were like, yeah, we'll tackle this. You know, this is the way that you do it. Rock and roll Hollywood style, and this is the way that we can get away doing it. And a lot of times we just kind of met, you know, we met in the middle. You know, there was a lot of just old school stuff, and then they had some contraptions. And then, you know, Robert was great about, like, when we met, you know, we have the scene where the teenage boy gets his head ripped off, mm-hmm. and we have the scene where the teenage girl gets her head cut off. And so we were sitting there meeting, and he goes, "Hi guys, I'd like to introduce my son Louis, and this is my daughter Sadie. They are both actors. They are very accomplished. You do not have to put them in your movie, but I have casts of both of them and it will save you thousands of dollars." And I was like, congratulations. Welcome to the fun house. So I was like, you know, he gets it. Like, he gets the spirit of what we were doing and just making it happen. And they were great. Every single gag you know, we didn't have the time to do them over and over again. I think the most we ever did any gag was maybe three times the whole entire film, and that was one gag.
Wow.
Everything else was one or two times. Without fail, they nailed it every time.
Do you feel like it's a challenge today to do practical versus digital in a horror movie especially?
Not so much a challenge. It's time, and then, you know, it's time and money. And, you know, when you have somebody that's as talented as Robert and Becky in house, it's like they can make things happen really quickly. And do it practically, and so it was, you know, it was okay. But, you know, it takes time. Like my DP, my director of photography, Philippe Letten, he said at the beginning of the movie, he goes, anything with gags is 4.5 pages a day. Anything with stunts is 3.5 pages a day. And I'm an editor. And so, and all my films I've, you know, done in very, very quick amount of time, you know, 12 days, 15 days. I'm like, whatever. I shoot 8-9 pages in my sleep, and without fail, every single day that we had makeup gags was 4.5 pages. Every single day that we had stunts was 3.5 pages.
Wow.
Philippe was right every single time. I mean, and it really becomes a formula. So then you adjust. You're like, okay, we get it now. We can't do more than this per day. So where do we move? You know, where do we move some other stuff? What scenes do we lose that don't kill the story that we can, and then we still get our gags. And so that, and there's a little adjusting here and there. So yeah, it's just time and money. I think people think that digital is easier, but I don't, at the end of the day, I don't think it is. I think it's harder because you still have to line up everything perfectly in camera to make the digital, to make, you know, to be able to pull off the digital shot. So I think if you can get away with it practically, then just do it.
And I'm going to let you go here in a second, so I'll be real quick, but Candace, where did you find Candace, who plays kind of a Harley Quinn-ish doll face character, is the
sure.
name of her character. Where did you find her?
Yeah, definitely inspired by Harley Quinn. Her name is Miss Quinn when she shows up as the newspaper reporter.
Yeah.
Yeah, Candace came on a recommendation from our executive producer, Michael Hassan. He had worked with her before and knew her family, and she was a model. She was very physical and stuff like that. And he said, you know, this girl's great. You got to take a look at her. And we said, okay, great. And I met with her, and she just had, you know, she did this like tremendously detailed backstory on Dollface, and I was like, wow, okay. I mean, she did her homework, and it was nothing. It was, you know, nothing that Ben and I had ever given her or anything like that. And so she really did her homework, and I was impressed with the, you know, how good she was with the physical stuff and just that kind of animated, that kind of bouncing around that she does. Because really after she kind of goes from Miss Quinn to Dollface, she doesn't have a lot of lines. It's all done physically, and mm-hmm. I think she did a great job.
Oh, she did. Her mannerisms were great. I was starting to love her character more and more as the movie went on. Last question. Now, the way that the film is set up, there's several twists. I'm not going to give those away, but was there the thinking series, sequels, anything like that? You thinking about returning to the funhouse?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. Like, I'm a big stickler for, like, if nothing ever happened ever again, it's fine. Because, you know, we do some things that leave it open for the story to continue. At the same time, the way we end it, it could just end tomorrow. So I don't think anybody's going to be like, oh man, well, why did you save something for the sequel that you could have done in this movie? But at the same time, yeah, we definitely leave it open. And nothing would make me happier than to get to go back to the funhouse. Cause I had so much fun with all those people. And it was so funny when we did the premiere on Friday and all the actors were there. Every actor that died in the movie came up to me, and this is no joke, came up to me and told me how their injuries were not life-threatening and that they should definitely be back after the sequel. And I was like, yeah, some of your injuries were really life-threatening. Like, you know, like when we smashed your head, you know, we smashed your head open with a mallet.
Oh, that was
pretty
so good. That was so good. That was so good. I love that moment. Yeah. That's a great moment.
but everybody, you know, Warner, my producing partner, and I, we really try to create a very, like, family atmosphere on set. And movies are hard. They're really hard. They're hard on hours. They're hard on everything. And we try to make it as much fun as we possibly can, because it's the best job on earth. It's getting paid to be a 12-year-old, you know, 12-year-old kid your whole life. It's not as good as it gets.
Well, what's next for you, as I let you go? What's next for you?
Got a couple things in the works. Ben just sent me a new a horror comedy that he wrote, which I absolutely love. So I'll be throwing that Warner's way to read. And then Warner came up with a great concept that we want to do is a fun, like, kind of slasher, old-school slasher movie that takes place at a high school during a 10-year high school reunion. That's what we're working on right now. Fun stuff in the works.
Looking forward to it. And I really can't recommend the movie enough. It was a really nice surprise. Do you worry about that in terms of, like, a low-budget horror movie because of there's a little bit of a stigma because there's so many cranked out these days? And yours is, like, a legitimately good one. I mean, how do you separate that when you're selling it to people or trying to get the name out?
Yeah, I just look for good stories. I mean, you know, all I've done is these kind of low budget horror movies, but they've all had really, like, good stories. I feel like, hey, we'll try our best to kind of separate it from the other stuff. But you know, I think the most important thing for me is always who's the movie about is more important than what's the movie about. And so the thing I loved about Funhouse more than anything is I really genuinely loved all the characters. I loved the bad guys. I love the good guys, and I think if you make characters that people care about, then they'll go on a ride with you for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thanks very much. I know I got to let you go, so I appreciate you taking the time to talk to us.
Oh gosh, appreciate that. Appreciate it so much. Anytime, absolutely. Thanks again.
All right. Well, good luck on the release, Andy, and drive safe.
Thanks so much. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
So, what'd you think? Huh? You either really want to see that movie or you're mad that you didn't already watch it. You should be mad you didn't already watch it because I really enjoyed it. There's a lot of cool kills, a lot of cool story twists, and I really did love Candace as the Harley Quinnish doll face. Very fun, very fun. And Jerry Burns, I can't tell you enough how much I love my Jerry Burns. Seriously, I know it almost sounds like a crush, but every time I see he's casting something, I have to see it. He's one of those actors for me. And once again, thanks for listening to this episode of the Hollywood Outsider Podcast. I really hope you guys enjoy when we bring you these special interviews with filmmakers and independent cinema. We try to do it for you because we know most of you listening really love to get that backstory, to understand how the process works and how these movies are made. And, you know, there's a lot that goes into it. And these are just regular people. They're just doing a job and they're trying to entertain you by doing that job. So it's nice when we can get them to open up and tell you a little bit more about the film. So definitely check out his movie, The Funhouse Massacre. Remember to subscribe and review us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, through whatever podcast app you listen to. Our normal show has a new episode every week, and it can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. And this is Aaron Peterson reminding you that the next time you head into the theater to watch The Funhouse Massacre, buy popcorn.